This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Olivier de Riviere, and it's just so wonderful to have a chance to talk with you again.
Well, thank you for having me, and you're one of the very few, maybe the only one, to say my name the right way, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I get to practice in Montreal. So. When we talked earlier this summer about Vampire, you mentioned that you had been working on something that was quite a bit different, and so it was a real revelation to have a chance to hear this gorgeous score for 1111 Memories Retold. It's set during the last few years of World War I. It sort of follows the stories of a Canadian photographer and a German father who goes to the front lines to find his son. And it must have been such an interesting departure to write something like this kind of on the heels of Vampire.
Yes. Well, now you know maybe a little bit about my career, which is, made out of a lot of different projects. And for each of them, I try to be very, let's say, devoted to what the game is about in terms of, so on the artistic part, so the musical aspect. And coming from Vampire, that was very dark and gritty and insane and crazy, going to 1111, that is much more lush and romantic almost, was, sort of the same gap that I made when I did Remember Me using orchestral and digital processing, and then Assassin's Creed with Haitian singing. And yeah, this is what I like to do. I like to explore, but in total devotion to the game purpose.
And it's fascinating. It's just such a lush, gorgeous orchestral score. Was there any overlap at all between this score and Vampire, or were you able to finish one project and then work on another?
Well, when I was finishing Vampire, I was already discussing with, people from Aardman, the studio behind 1111, about the game, of course. But I was also starting another game that I can't speak about now. However, when the real work started for 1111, I warned everybody that I would be full time on this project for an amount, of time. And I was totally, let's say, involved, like without nothing in mind but this very game.
It shows. The thing about the soundtrack especially is it feels like a concert work because of the way you've used the themes that recur. There's the wonderful theme that we first hear in the prelude that you blend with others, and then there's Harry's wonderful theme, and of course the military reveille almost when they get to the trenches and then the front lines, and we can kind of pull all those apart in just a little while. I'd love to do that.
Yes, you're totally right saying that this music could be standalone as mainly a ballet, I would say. And why is that? It's because the way we made the game, actually, you're right, because the relationship we sort of entertained was not a relationship of getting the story written and then having the visuals and the game and then the music, but rather having every elements being written at the same time. So it means that the music should be telling the story as much as the visuals, as much as the story itself, you know, the script and the dialogues. So the music needed to be working without any support. So that's why you have this feeling, and I'm happy you can feel it.
Yeah. And the style of the game is so interesting because first of all, it's not what you'd expect from Aardman Studios. I mean, they're better known for, say, Wallace and Gromit and their wonderful animated films. And this looks like a painting. It looks like a Renoir, which sort of sets the period, and then obviously being in World War I as well. So did you kind of feel like you had to keep your music in that same time period?
Yeah, that was the initial conversation was about why the music, what the music, you know, the usual questions. And it happened that because of the style they were using, so it's a living paintings, like, you know, oil painting, impressionist paintings. What happened was I felt, okay, I need to have a lot of colors in the music. And also because it's about World War One, we wanted the music to be a little noble, you know, something that was like respectful. And it turned out quite easily that to have an orchestra with a choir would be the best way of expressing what the visuals were asking and the subject matter. However, I mean, we didn't want, you know, to feel like, oh yeah, because it's, you know, World War One orchestral score and all of this. It's rather used to express inner feelings. You know, it's mostly a quiet soundtrack. It's very about humane, that about the war itself.
And the stories of the two characters are so interesting because rather than each one of them signing on as a political agenda, you know, Harry is a kind of a naive photographer in Toronto who wants to get the girl. He wants to be able to wear a uniform so that he can come back and impress his would-be girlfriend. And Kurt goes to find his son, who's been missing in action. So neither one of them are there, you know, to win the war. They're there for very personal reasons. And so because their characters are so interesting, that must have given you a lot of possibilities to kind of describe them with your music.
Yes, definitely. And as I mentioned, the writers were creating the characters as I was writing the music. So we were having those conversations like, so who's Harry? And they were describing him as they were, so writing it, him. And they were like, oh, he's very naive. He wants to, as you said, you know, to go for an adventure, and he wants to impress this girl. And they started to sort of, you know, because we were using Skype video, and I saw them like doing little waves, you know, like from left to right with their hands, you know, like, oh yeah, you know, he's like naive like this. Thank you. And then we talked about Kurt, and they were like, oh no, Kurt is much more grounded, you know, and they were like going up and down with their hands. And it gave me the guidelines actually for writing the music. So melodic for Harry and more harmonic for Kurt.
And you really get to hear that because Harry's voyage really does capture that sense of an adventure. There he is out on the deck of the transport ship that's headed to Europe on the open ocean. And there's just this sense that he is setting off on an adventure and having the chorus. Oh, the song is wonderful. Are they singing in French?
Yes, they are. It's something also we discussed about, like, what would be the language. And we didn't want to take any side. And since the game happens in France, and since I'm French, I was like, okay, let's write the lyrics in French.
Thank you.
And then that is really contrasted with Kurt's journey on the train, because he's got a much more serious mission. His anxiety over his son, I think, really colors the experience, and your music really captures that as well.
Well, that's I mean, thank you. It's Kurt is much more, he's deeper, you know. He has a complexity that Harry doesn't have. And throughout the game, if you listen carefully, so those themes that starts, for Harry, at the very beginning, the theme is very obvious. For Kurt, you start with just a harmony, and the more you go, the more you get a little sense of melody. But as you may notice, at some point, and of course at the very end, the two themes are played, you know, counterpoint. And because of what's happening in the game, of course, and it makes total sense in, you know, storytelling.
I loved how the writers brought the two characters together at the Battle of Vimy. What was it like to write that, the music for that battle scene and that really terrifying moment in the game?
Yeah, but that was one of the few moments we were wondering what would be the tone, mostly for Harry, because basically, you know, this is a very scary, this is the first time he goes on the front, the actual front to fight. And the music starts kind of scary, but then one of his, I mean, the major that made him go to war to impress this girl, he's such a, I don't know how to say exactly in English, but he's such like a warmonger, but in a best way, like nothing can touch him, you know, he's invincible, and he wants to, you know, give that that feeling to his soldiers, so to Harry. So when you start with Harry, you have this very bright, and you know, the brass and it's you know, it goes like, yeah, let's go, let's make it, we're gonna take the ridge, and it's gonna be great, blah, blah, blah. And on the other side, when you have Kurt, so the music switches like in the soundtrack itself, you know, from Harry to Kurt, Harry to Kurt. You can hear that Kurt is very more like scared of hurting people. He doesn't want to do this, but he has to sort of, you know, take a part, an active part, but he would never, you know, hold a gun. So he's helping people around him. And what happens is like the closer they get, the more the music, like the military music, gets very distorted with a lot of clashes, you know, dissonance like in the music. And from Kurt, you know, it's the same. You start hearing the Canadians, so this military motive, closer and closer up to the very end, when you hear it in a very wrong way, I might say, you know, because the Germans lost.
Thank you. It's very powerful. And that trumpet call that you've woven throughout the score, I think the first time it turns up is while Harry is still at sea and they see mines, and all of a sudden it's kind of a reminder that, oh yeah, he's on his way to fight in a war. That sound, that trumpet sound, is so iconic, and I'm just wondering where you kind of found that from. Did you listen to other music from the period that used trumpet music or battle music?
Well, actually, no. Number one, I would never listen to anything when I score a game because it's not my way of working. But the thing is, it's a historical game, so I was like, although most of the music is there to tell a story, fictional story in historical events, I was like, okay, the only thing that could be historical, because it's very, as you said, iconic, is a trumpet call. And so I went online, I have to tell, to check if, this was still happening at the period of time, like to have trumpet calls. And yes, it was for the Commonwealth, so Canada, England, of course, and Australia, they were using this. And so I wrote a sort of a call, the way I happened to think it would work. And it was to capture this sort of childish, because it is very childish, to hear this, this childish sort of take on war. Because when you hear this nowadays, it's like, oh, it's funny, But it wasn't at the time. It was the way they were using trumpets. So that's kind of weird. And I remember having some discussion, like strong discussions with the creative director about that. But, in the end, I think it pays off.
And it's very powerful. And like, I actually didn't hear it as kind of a joke at all, because in the context of the game, it's such a wonderful fit. And the thing that really struck me, here in the U.S., there really aren't very many reminders of World War I at all. There are maybe some towns that'll have a memorial. But in Europe, I remember traveling across Belgium and seeing a battlefield with just thousands of markers. And it really struck me how, it hasn't really disappeared off the map the way it has here. And so, I don't know, did having the closeness, the proximity to that sort of history of World War I, did that help at all with getting ideas?
I don't think so. No, it's too far away from me. The thing is, basically, World War I was about territory rather than ideology. So it's a very different war. And it's, in terms of what happened, it was very different from World War II. With so many different aspects in World War II than just war, I believe that what is very interesting having a game about World War I is that it's not about war. It's about people. And that's why the music, was there to pay respect, of course, but also to tell that to any war, it's about people. It's not about the war itself. And that's what this game is about. It's about those two guys and their families as well.
And there's a wonderful moment when Harry gets some leave and he goes to Paris. And I was listening to the soundtrack in the car and I wasn't looking at the titles of the tracks. And there is just something about the music that you wrote for that is so iconically French. Without even knowing what the title of the piece was or the context, I could just, it sounded like Paris. And I would just love to know, what you think makes French music sound so very French.
I'm French. I've been educated in France, in terms of style. Okay. So since my very young age, since I was 5 years old, I got the education that gave me, how can I say this? We have the culture of the note. So it means that every note we write needs to have a previous note that we know about and the next note that we prepare for. So every note is important, rather than the sound itself. So the sound itself is much more an American or English way of thinking music. So I don't know, maybe, I mean, not for what you're talking specifically, so when Harry is in Paris, because I will explain what's there. But overall, you know, this music sounds, I think, more French than other soundtracks that I've been writing, because I was applying all of my education onto, you know, the score. So that's number one. Number two, Harry's leave is a very funny moment where Harry is forced to dance on a stage in a cabaret, something like this, like Moulin Rouge. And it's an idea from the writers, by the way. And me, if you want to know the inspiration, I mean, I couldn't tell. If you think about Jacques Brel, I don't know if you know, he's a...
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess this is coming from there, but as well as Kurt Weill, I don't know if you know him. Mm-hmm. You know, so all these composers that were, I mean, Kurt Weill is not French, but he's been writing a lot of, let's say, music that influenced, you know, France. So I think this is taken from that. And, you know, I'm happy it sounded French to you.
No, I could hear like little echoes of Poulenc, and even the way Gershwin captured that iconic sound in his American in Paris. There's something just cool. Really... Yeah, no, it's very cool. And actually, as you were mentioning Jacques Brel, I also thought of Maurice Chevalier. There's just something about something about that really French quality that's just spectacular. We touched on the choral works a little bit. Who was the chorus performing?
The chorus was the Pinewood Singers. So it's a professional chorus. And we had to handpick them, because what happened was, like, I wrote the score for Children's Voice, but because of time constraint, it was impossible to get a children's choir. So what happened is I really didn't want to have a female sound choir as much as possible. So we went to this choir because we could know that every female that could sing in a way that, you know, it was the closest to children's choir.
It's a beautiful sound. It's really haunting, and it has this really incredible quietness to it. The track An Unmarked Grave is just a gorgeous piece. I can kind of imagine that sort of standing on its own as a concert work, and in the context of the game, it's really powerful.
Well, yeah, that's the moment when Kurt he's in the field of crosses, you say, where he's looking for his own son's grave. So it's a very strong moment, but as you can notice, it's not too sad, too mellow, too, you know, we really want it to be very respectful, you know. And the choir there, you know, if you want to take the reference, I'm a very big fan of Gabriel Fauré, Requiem. And what he wrote, you know, is exactly that. I mean, he wrote about death in a very peaceful way. And I think this is what I borrowed from him, you know, this idea. And I applied this to this sequence and to the whole soundtrack, actually.
I picked up on that too. There's a comforting sound to the Fauré Requiem as well.
Because I'm using Fauré cadenza. I don't know if you know, but there is a cadenza that he gave, I don't know, but a name to his cadenza. The way he writes cadenza is so unique. I mean, was so unique that you can go on Wikipedia, look at cadenza, you have all the list, and you have one that is Fauré cadenza.
That's fascinating. I had no idea, but what a great thing to borrow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can go. I mean, this is one of the beautiful, you know, as I was mentioning, it's about, you know, direction of each notes. And that's, I mean, he created this. And I think this is what makes the soundtrack as well very, very light, you know, like peaceful, you know, not like boom, boom.
Well, it's also really cool because, you know, he was around. He lived through World War One, and wrote this wonderful piece at the end, just relief at the war being over. And so that's such a nice way of, I don't know, just kind of bringing it full circle, or at least, you know, making this, reminding us that this was a living period in history with real people
What you're saying is so true. It's like at the, you know, this time period, it was, you know, life was vivid, you know, people were expressing like everything. I mean, artists, it was such a vivid moment for creativity on every aspect, you know, like the paintings, the music, you know, cinema was, you know, about to become what, I mean, not what it is now, but what it became.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of like the start of modern life, I think.
Yes.
That time period. Yeah.
And it was very exciting, and it was very personal. Everybody would bring, you know, like Stravinsky with, you know, Rite of the Spring. All of this was so exciting. You know, it was an incredible period of time, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's so amazing to go back and see it through this lens of this gorgeous game. Because there's not a lot of interactivity, I mean, you have to make choices, and sometimes you have to make really difficult choices, but it's not the same kind of game as Vampire, where you're fighting and dealing with bosses that could take, you know, various lengths of time. Was the process more like writing for a film?
Exactly. Actually, it was like writing for a film without all the terrible aspect of doing a film. No, I mean, scoring a game is such a treat. I mean, people don't get it. I mean, it's good for me and for the people that are scoring games because we're having the time of our lives. But yeah, it was, I mean, this game is very linear, as you said. There is not much like challenge. It's rather a peaceful walkthrough in terms of gameplay. I mean, walkthrough a story. I mean, you just experience a story. So it's not the kind of games that I would do if I had, like, let's say, if you look at my career, you know, it's not like I like to explore how to use music on gameplays and all of this. But, you know, having Aardman involved and having such, you know, subject matter, I was like, oh, my God, I need to do this game.
And the end result is just such a gorgeous, moving entire package. It's just really, really fabulous. And you got to record at Abbey Road, which must have been amazing.
Yeah, it's every time I go there, because it's going to be the third time. Yeah. And it's always with John Colander. So John Colander is the sound engineer that recorded The Lord of the Rings, for instance. And so many, I mean, he's been recording everything. And he was chief engineer of EMI Classical for 15 years at Abbey Road. And what's so funny is that when we started working on 1111, I told him, oh, you know, I want the sound to be very authentic, genuine. I want to hear the instruments. And he was like, yeah, but this is Abbey Road. I mean, it's a big room. So we were like sort of trying to find the right sound. When he made the recording, we came back to Paris. I mean, afterwards, we came to Paris to make the mixing. And I remember one night after 4 days of big failure, like every day was like, no, that's not the sound. That's not the sound. There is something we're missing. We went out to a restaurant. I remember I was driving, and in the car, I played Fauré Requiem for him, telling him, listen to this French music being in Paris, you know, enjoy your time. And he was listening very carefully. And the next morning he said, listen, Olivier, leave me alone for 15 minutes and come back after 15 minutes. I was like, okay. So he did something, you know, and I came back, he hit play. And then I'm like, wow, that's exactly what we need. And he said, yeah, actually what you wanted is a classical recording. So he removed everything, every effect, every reverb, compression, EQ, whatever. He just put the mics that he was used to when he was recording classical music, and he just hit play. So this is one of the last genuine sound you can get from an orchestra in Abbey Road. I mean, nowadays, nobody does that anymore.
Thank you. That's fascinating. I didn't even think about it, the process of getting that sound into the soundtrack, because I listen to classical music all day. Mm-hmm. So it didn't strike me as sounding unique. But now that you've described the process, that's really fascinating. And it must have been just a joy to have the Philharmonia Orchestra to work with, too.
Oh, yeah. Every time, you know, it's the same. You know, every big project, I want to go there and work with them. And it's like for Remember Me, even better here. I mean, they came afterwards, you know, to me, like the concertmaster, and he was like, we need to play this music outside the game. I mean, this is not a game soundtrack. It's real music. So I was flattered, of course, and I thought he was too kind. But then, you know, another member of the orchestra came to me, and another, you know, and the manager, and everybody was like, oh, you need to make something out of this music. So I was like, okay, but it's not my job. So I was flattered, you know, very flattered, and it felt very good. And it made them even more involved, you know, into performing the music. So that was the good aspect.
Yeah, definitely, because the arc of the themes, I mean, they do sound like real concert pieces. So hopefully at some point you'll be able to get together with somebody and put this together as a concert piece, because yeah, that would be...
I'll be maybe 84, 85, and I'll be like, oh, I remember.
Well, you hinted that you've got another project in the works, and so I'm sure we'll have another chance to talk soon. And Olivier, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kate, for having me. Always a pleasure. And yeah, next time we'll talk about something different again.
That seems to be our track record.